We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you and a great Memorial Day, May 27th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports off and running on 1037 The Game. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D, didn't know when the Astros would finish, but we did have a pretty good idea that they'd finish out on top. It's just what they do of late. Astros have won 18 of their last 23, and Roberto Acuña, shaky in the ninth against those Chicago Cubs, but A.J. Hinch and the Astros got it done. So here's our game plan. Going to lead off talking LSU baseball. We now know the Tigers' fate. There will be a Baton Rouge Regional, and there are some bad boys and one very hauntingly familiar name that are coming to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm going to lead off discussing all of those. We got a Q&A replay with Richard Justice, king of the Astros, where they are, what's coming up next. He and I also foretold a pretty cool moment with Craig Biggio's son, Kevin, over the weekend in Toronto. You'll get that next, and then we got great, and I do mean great, interviews and some great content coming up, 5 until 7 o'clock. You're in the right place. But I'm going to lead off my thoughts on the Baton Rouge Regional. And when the dust cleared, LSU, the number 13 national seed. Yes, that means you host. Yes, that means you're matched up with the 4 seed should you advance to Super Regional play. And who's that number 4 seed? Well, wouldn't you know it, place where I graduated from college, the Georgia Bulldogs. And so it's not as unlikely as you may think. After all, the SEC got a record-tying 10 teams into the field of 64. 10. 6 of them are regional hosts. 4 are super regional hosts. And so while Vandy and Arkansas and Georgia and Mississippi State are top 8 teams, LSU and Ole Miss are just regional host seeds, at least for now. Should LSU advance out of this coming weekend in Baton Rouge, they would either get Georgia the 1 seed, FAU is the 2 seed, and how about this, Florida State is the 3 seed. So always be peeking about what's on the other side of the bend. LSU, if it can get through Baton Rouge, is either headed to Athens, Georgia, or FAU, Florida State, is coming to the Red Stick. But let's look at the challenge at hand. It is a significant one. LSU taking on Stony Brook Friday at about 6 p.m. Isn't that just rosy? 2012, Stony Brook came through in super regional play and stunned the entirety of Baton Rouge. The good news, the best news of all, people, that was 7 years ago. If you think anybody in that LSU dugout not named Paul Maneri has any kind of a memory for that sort of thing, you're outside your mind. These kids now playing for LSU were quite literally in 6th, 7th, 8th grade. None of them were in high school, not even Chris Reed. And it feels like he's been at LSU for about 8 years now. So there won't be a memory of that series except for what shows like this, newspapers, online publications do to remind everybody. But here's the bigger batter wolf that's coming to Baton Rouge. It's not that ghost Stony Brook from the past. It's the 2nd seed in Arizona State. And you darn well better be mindful of the 3 seed in Southern Miss as well. But Arizona State, the Sun Devils, have one of the best offenses in all of college baseball. They've got 2 of the top power producers in all of the sport on an individual basis. So what I'm telling you today and what will be crammed down your throat from this moment until Saturday afternoon, when LSU presumably will meet up with Arizona State, is beware the bomb. And be mindful of the long ball. Because this Sun Devil group can mash with the best of them. And I would imagine it's going to be Landon Marceau's job to keep some of those Lions, Tigers, Bears, oh my, at bay for a Saturday start. LSU against Stony Brook, who's going to pitch? Really not even particularly important at this juncture, in my opinion. Not sure that Clay Moffitt will be on enough rest to go, although maybe he will be. When he went up against Mississippi State, well, that was Friday night. So, yeah, okay, maybe a week later he can go. And the whole staff approach doesn't seem like a bad one at all. But I want to be able to fire my best bullets, and I want all of my bullets available for Saturday and Sunday. But LSU did do enough to host, and I think they stamped their claim even before dusting off Mississippi State in 10-run rule fashion. But they darn sure did that. And they got vengeance on a team that will be a regional and even potentially a super regional host in the Bulldogs. But LSU got what they wanted. They've got a home path. But they've got a really good team in Arizona State coming to town. And should LSU advance, wouldn't it be fun to see the Tigers and Bulldogs, not Mississippi State, but Georgia, square off adjacent to the hedges, not quite, between the hedges at Sanford Stadium in Athens, Georgia. LSU has got through. They've got a tough road to hoe this time of year. How else would you like it? UCLA is the top overall seed. And you want to talk about change from a year-to-year basis? UCLA is matched up super regional-wise with Oregon State. LSU knows all about those pesky Beavers. All right, we got a lot coming your way. Make sure you stick with us. A special Memorial Day edition of B2BS coming right back at you on 103.7 The Game. Here we go, back in one more time in this abbreviated first hour. It's a Memorial Day special edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game. The big news we just gave you, but again, we shall reiterate because it is, well, at least somewhat funny on the part of the selection committee. LSU fans may use a different word, but there will be a Baton Rouge Regional. LSU technically seated 13th of the 16 teams to be awarded these home regionals. Southern Miss is coming, as I told you. That probably deserves to be the bigger storyline. Southern Miss can hit it a ton, so this is not what you would call a great draw for LSU baseball. The three seed is, let's see here, Southern Miss, and then finally, your four seed, and here's the ironic slash funny slash, hey, why would you do that to us portion? Stony Brook is the four seed coming to the Baton Rouge Regional. So as always, make no assumptions, but do be armed with this knowledge. LSU playing some pretty good baseball down this final stretch. Took 2 of 3 from Auburn at home to close out the regular season. Darn near swept that thing, except Zach Hess wasn't quite right. Then Hess did get right in the SEC tournament. For that matter, just about everybody pitching, not named Eric Walker, got right over this past week in Hoover. So LSU baseball looking okay, and they will take on Stony Brook. It's Friday, first pitch slated for about 6 p.m. Oh, what a week it will be. Oh, what a week last week was. And we wanted to air at least some of the goods that we got from Minute Maid Park. We decided to limit it to just the one interview. And the one that we have brought forward that'll serve you best today as the Astros, they just got done game one of the Cubbies that are in town. So they're 4 games into a hellacious 6-game stretch. But it was great to sit down and chat with Richard Justice, MLB.com. And how about a quick caveat as we head into this Q&A replay? On Friday, I asked Richard, and you'll hear it here in the open, about Kevin Biggio being greenlit all the way up from AAA to the show, playing with the Toronto Blue Jays. Since we've done that interview, Kevin went big fly north of the border, and his dad was in the stands watching. How cool that must have been. So that was a caveat worth throwing out there in advance. But this guy, anytime we can get him, he's worthy of our time. The first time around, and then certainly for a Q&A replay. Without any further ado, my chat with all-time great Major League Baseball scribe, Richard Justice.
How do you react to Kevin Biggio about to play professional baseball? And ironically enough, he'll suit it up alongside Vlad Jr. north of the border. That's pretty cool.
Well, for a lot of us in Houston, it's like having our own son called up. Those three kids, Connor and Kevin, who both played at Notre Dame, and Quinn, the girl, who's playing softball at Notre Dame now. I mean, we've seen them in the Astros clubhouse since they were knee high. And we've watched Connor grow up and become a successful in his business. He worked for Major League Baseball for a while. And now to see Kevin do this, I know Craig and Patty are bursting with pride, but we're all bursting with pride too. They did a wonderful job raising those kids, you know, and it was great that Craig got to be his high school coach.
When you think about this Red Sox-Astros, I'll call it, I don't know about a rivalry, but it's two of the elites in baseball. There's no question about it, right? The last three World Series have come from these two teams. An ALCS battle last year. What do you make out of that? Where they are, and if this might become something maybe that's pretty fun over the next couple of years?
You know, a rivalry like this comes and goes depending on what the stakes that are there. You know, when the Astros were in the NL Central, their rivalry was with the Cardinals and the Cubs and the Reds, and it takes time to develop a rivalry. What you have in this is two really good teams. There's been no emotional spark or anything. They've been at the last 2 years in the postseason. And really, the way the ALCS ended was Andrew Benintendi caught a ball off his ankle that the Astros are going to game six. If they win the game, they got Justin Verlander pitching. They feel like they're going to be the team going to the World Series. I asked Alex Bregman who hit that ball. I said, how many times did you go? How many times have you watched the play? And I've watched it a bunch of times, and every time the bat's off the ball, you think Andrew's Benintendi's not going to catch the ball. And Bregman said he watched it a dozen times that night, and he was so furious about it, the way it worked out, that he went and was back in the gym working out the next day. So, yeah, it means something.
Talking Astros baseball with one of the best writing, not only about the Astros, but all over Major League Baseball. It's Richard Justice, MLB.com. Does this team feel better equipped to win it all than the group a year ago? And then why or why not?
Well, they're better than the team that won it in 2017, but that doesn't mean you're going to win it. If you designed a playoff team, this would be it. The offense is the best in baseball. You have arguably the two best starting pitchers in baseball at the front of the rotation, and you have arguably the two best closers pitching the eighth and ninth inning. But, you know, like when you go back and look at 17, you see what Marlon Gonzalez does and hit an 0-2 Kenley Jansen fastball over the wall in the ninth inning, game two. We're not having this conversation about winning in 2017. Game five was the craziest World Series game I've ever seen. Stuff like that. So a million things have to happen. And when you look at the American League, you would say the five teams that we thought were the best teams, four of those teams are there. The Twins have replaced the Indians. But, you know, the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees are all going to the playoffs. And then when you get to the World Series, you know, the Dodgers are really good. The Cubs have a chance to be really good. And who knows? The Phillies look pretty good right now.
Richard, I had a chance earlier today to catch up with Jeff Bagwell, and he said the 17 through 19 era Astros would beat the snot out of the 05 Astros. How would you compare and contrast those two generations of teams?
Well, Jeff is being gracious. And I know he loves those guys. He loves Altuve, and he loves the way Bregman plays. He loves George Springer. When you look at not the 05 team, but if you look at the 04 team, that was about as good a team as you're ever going to see. Jeff Kent made the offense deeper. You had Pettit and Clemens and Oswald. And then you had that bullpen that had Dotel and Lidge and Billy Wagner. I mean, that was a great team. They were more offensively challenged in 2005, but they still did have Pettit, Clemens, and Oswald. Martin.
Just an incredible team, no question about it. And Richard, when you look at the way this team is rolling along, a couple of hiccups to the Chicago White Sox, what do you make out of this Corbin Martin kid and his opportunity to maybe stick and stay in this rotation?
Yeah, he's got, you know, you don't know if a guy's going to succeed. And when you have a World, when you have World Series aspirations, you're not going to turn it into a tryout camp. But they feel like they had enough starting pitching and they have enough gap between them and everybody else in the American League West that they can let it play out with Corbin Martin and Forrest Whitley and J.D. Dukakis, whoever comes up. Hopefully Colin McHugh comes back soon. Corbin Martin has everything you need to succeed. He has. He got a little timid in the strike zone at Fenway Park. He got a little too aggressive in the strike zone last night. I mean, I'm convinced with both Whitley and Martin, those guys are going to be big successes. But how quickly it happens is how quickly you gain confidence in your stuff and you realize that up here you have to be pinpointing your control.
Well, let's take that same principle then and apply it to guys at the plate. And everybody seems to be clamoring for Yordan Alvarez to come up. What's your feel for maybe when that could happen and the impact he might be able to make this year?
Well, they have the best offense in baseball. I think they're first in a bunch of categories. So I don't know what they need offensively. I know everybody wants to see him, but I don't know how much better he could make them. I don't know that there's any question about the offense. But he's a guy that they, you know, Jeff Luno has had a obsession with not trading prospects. He looks at what happened with the Cubs. They won in 2016, and they trying to win in 2017, 2018. They depleted their farm system. And he just has walked away from trades. He walked away from a James Paxton trade, JT Realmuto. He just said, we're not trading Kyle Tucker. We're not trading Forrest Whitley. And if that's what the price for getting one of these guys, we'll just don't keep our powder dry. Now, eventually, they may have to do that. But they don't feel they're in a position to have to do that right now.
All right, as we let you go here, you mentioned earlier that you thought just about everybody in the AL that was supposed to be good is. Maybe replace Cleveland with Minnesota. But you threw Tampa in there. So tell me, did you expect this, and can they keep it rolling?
What did you say? Say that again. I didn't hear that.
Can the Rays keep their pace going and maybe make it to the playoffs?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Rays are a deep team. They're the real deal. And if you look at the pitching staff that throws the ball the hardest and the offense that hits the ball the hardest, the Rays are that team, and they've had a very, very pretty simple way of putting together the team. It's just we're going to go for exit velocity. We're going to go for fastball velocity. And they're really good. They're really young, and they're really deep, and they have a good farm system.
Richard, I appreciate you coming on. I know you're not at the ballpark today, but I promise we'll hold it down for you. Enjoy your baseball season.
Thank you, Ben.
There you have it. And, yeah, you can already pardon the pun, but justice has been served, if I do say so myself. All right, we got a lot coming your way. Over the next 2 hours, we'll have interviews with Shane Savoy talking Saints-more Cougars football. And they got a couple of big-time prospects at quarterback. All reports indicate that they play well together. Caleb Holstein and the young up-and-comer in Walker Howard. Yeah, a lot of talent there. We'll let Shane Savoy tell you all about them. And in the 6 o'clock hour, back-to-back interviews, we're going to lead them off at 6:15 with Chance LeMaire. Prep Hoops Louisiana, and then you'll hear from the head coach of the Cane Cutters. Yeah, that's right, the Acadiana Cane Cutters before they get going this summer at Fallbacher Field. So we're going to be awfully busy, and at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, we'll even reminisce a little bit on 4 years of B2BS and what a thing that is. All right, no BS here. CD, we got to wind down. Hour number one, albeit a short one, with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Peace, and may we wish the family of Bill Buckner that he rest in peace. MLB veteran Bill Buckner passed away today at the age of 69. The man suited up for 22 seasons from 1969 all the way through 1990. The news of his passing actually was first reported by former MLB player and manager Bobby Valentine. So, again, our thoughts and prayers go out to Bill Buckner. It's Memorial Day. There are a lot of things that are on our minds, the veterans that have helped defend our home turf time and again, but we do want to make sure to spend a little time. The man went through one of the most infamous plays in all of American sports history, and I'm quite certain that's what he'll be remembered for. But on this day, we just want to make sure that he is remembered and that his family is thought of. 69 years young, Bill Buckner. May you rest in peace. Peace is the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station, your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. A lot more to go. Two more hours in a special Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. It's a Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And, of course, we're live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D. And for the next 2 hours, we got you, bringing you home holiday style from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Already on the program, well, we bridged you between the Astros game and here. But I got to tell you, I don't like to give it up for me. I don't mind giving it up for us. And so we'll do a little bit of that right now. 4 years yesterday, compadre, 4 years of Bumper to Bumper Sports. I cannot believe they've allowed this to persist for as long as it has.
I'm not surprised they've allowed it to last as long as it has. I'm just surprised they've let it last as long as it has in its current formation with you and me.
Oh, wow.
More for me. Let's just put it that way.
So who's getting Das Boot? I was about to say
I'm
this equation.
Me.
I mean, here we are about 30 minutes before any shades being thrown and shots are being fired. And
to
yet,
myself.
Sure. I vividly remember May 26th of 2015. I mean, like, vividly. I got to be careful here because I don't want to get into some dangerous, crappy Bob Hope territory where I tell the same story every holiday season, right?
Yeah.
Kids pull up next to the fire here. Granddad's going to tell you a story. And they realize it's the same damn story we hear every year. So hopefully I'm not entering that territory, but I do vividly remember doing the show remotely from my house back then in Baton Rouge in late May of 2015. I vividly remember. Hopefully none of the management at our station and our, company is listening right now. I remember being told, please don't promote the show in advance. And thinking to myself, what? Like, maybe they're not sure this is going to work? They don't think this is going to maybe be something that sticks? They're not sure that the tech part's going to work? Like, I'm going to be sitting here, happy Monday to you from Baton Rouge. And nobody in Lafayette's going to hear me? I'm not sure why, but I vividly remember being told, please don't promote this. Once you do a show, then we'll talk about it. So, you know, 1 3-hour show talking with Jeff Palermo and Alfred Payton later, I was allowed to tweet about it.
That was a really good show. That was a really good way to start things off, that show.
So I remember those things. Yeah. I also remember, and I know I've said this on the show before, I remember after 2 or 3 weeks almost literally having to go to the hospital because my stomach was like constantly just churning in knots. So the transition from writing day to day to coming on the air and everything just being live, having to live with the fact that occasionally there's going to be mishaps, something's going to come out of your mouth a little sideways. Clint will play the wrong sound. Okay, that never happens. But I vividly also have recollections. I viscerally remember that part. Radio almost made me quite literally sick to my stomach for a few weeks doing this because it was so nerve-wracking for me. So anybody says, hey, this is easy, you could just come on and spit and do it, I don't know, man. I think it takes an acclimation period.
It really does. It takes a lot of repetition, a lot of practice, especially because you used to do radio in the past, but it was just once a week. When you do a show every day, it kind of you just got to get into that mode, you know?
It is a completely different thing to drive a radio show and be in the driver's seat and then to be somebody who basically gets the ride shoddy, or, you know, you mentioned I was a regular guest on programs on 103.7 before coming on. That's correct. At that point, you're literally sitting in the back seat.
Yep.
I mean, dude, you don't have to do anything. Somebody eventually throws you a bone and, okay, it's my turn to talk again, and you just crush it. And at that point, I was covering LSU as a beat writer day-to-day, so, I mean, coming off the top of the dome with facts on LSU was like breathing for me at that point. This is different. Yeah. This takes some planning. This takes some understanding that things are going to go wrong, and I have no problem telling you, as you know, well, Clint knows this, but our listeners out there, when you do a show on remote, there are so many things that can go wrong. It's really, it's yeah. amazing when you consider all the moving pieces that have to stay in motion for things not to go wrong.
Especially, like, I mean, early on during Bumper to Bumper Sports' run, you were talking about at your home in Baton Rouge back then, we had some issues early on. We had a lot of issues, and then also whenever you're out at high school football games, I feel more so as opposed to, you know, when at the tap room on Thursdays or on Fridays that Ravino's on the river now. Like I said, we've grown a lot, and I feel like being able to do the remotes consistently, not have as many of the problems that we had early on, it's great.
Yep, and people would laugh if they saw how the setup was May 26, 2015. So
I don't think I've ever seen it.
We're going to just go ahead and keep that in the Smithsonian, where it belongs. But I'll tell you this, without getting too much more, I guess, down memory lane for that portion of our four-year birthday celebration, one day late, I'll think more along the lines of how much fun it's been with the different guests. And when you go on remote, I mean, yeah, everybody's heard me tell the story about the note that gets passed over, please play Brick House.
Yeah.
But look, that's few and far between. More often than that, you meet people out that say, dude, we love the show. Dude, we listen all the time. And it's not just the show, it's the station. Thanks for giving us an outlet. Thanks for letting us listen to something in Iberia Parish or something we can catch and it's clear as a bell at night. I mean, look, I understand. There's been a sports station in this market for quite some time, but you'll understand that I'm quite partial to this one, and it's been a lot of fun manning the drive home for Acadiana. And I do know this. There have been a lot of people who not only come on this show because maybe it could help them, right?
Yep.
And I know as somebody who was in those shoes, yeah, if you're a young up-and-comer, it helps to get your name out there. It helps to get your reps up on radio, even TV, all these things. There are people that come on this show because they love talking to Acadiana. And I hope everybody listening understands that because sometimes they say it. Like Shea will come on.
Yeah.
Our buddy Shea Dixon will say all the time, it's one of my favorite parts of every week. I love talking to the people of Acadiana. He's not BSing you there. He genuinely loves talking to people in our area, and it happens to me a lot. So not just with people who listen to the show, who come up on a guy doing a remote, but also when I get to interview people in person, they talk about how much fun it is to talk sports in Acadiana because of how diverse it is. I get that a lot. I take that as a compliment to the show, the station, but more than that, to YP, you people out there in listener land.
It's amazing to see how many people can kind of come out to these events. Like we talk about Rufino's on the River, Tap Room, and it's always just fun to kind of see things be talked about from a different perspective. And it's a lot better live and in person. We've had the great Reed Ryan stories that we've had a couple weeks ago. We had Louis Cook on the show.
Now two of them, Reed Ryan stories.
Yes, we've had those stories. We have Louis Cook, Mondu Duplantis going in on the LHSAA live on radio. That was amazing. We've had some great interviews over the years.
It is always better when you can get people live, right?
In person. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, you know, not only that, but I made a living before doing this off of interviewing people and then writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question that when you could sit down with somebody, they get a feel for who you are and what you're about, your facial expressions. Look, my mom's side is Italian, so when I say that, I'm telling you how you talk with your hands, or at least how I talk with my hands, because I sure as hell do it. So when you interview somebody in person, yeah, I mean, they get a better feel for who you are, what you're about, and in certain instances, how genuinely you may actually care about promoting the sport, the program, the state. Those things for me have always come across with people that I encounter in the state of Louisiana. They like people that put the boot on a certain pedestal. And locally, they love people who are going to put the hub city in Acadiana in a particular light. And, you know, look, just speaking of that, later in the show, we're going to have Shane Savoy aboard.
Nice.
That guy would be another good example of somebody who loves talking shop any time of the year. and he loves promoting not just STM, but local prep sports. And so that's where I think a show like this, I mean, what RP3 is doing in the mornings now, that's where shows like this can really, I think, take hold in a local community. Yes, we're an LSU affiliate. Yes, we're an Astros affiliate. And I talk a bunch of both. You know that if you listen to this show. We talk a bunch of Cajuns, Saints. But I think when you can really boil it down to a local level, yeah, you may not build a show that way that is meant to branch out and be syndicated in Atlanta, New York, and that's never what I've intended for this show. Now, I have no problem telling you, I do think this show one day will be in different cities. I mean, Lafayette plus other cities in Louisiana. You can do that with the local game. A boy can dream. Believe me, though, I think it will happen sooner than later. My point being to you, the more local you keep it, the better it goes. And that speaks to the enthusiasm of people here about prep sports.
And I think this is, we talk about it all the time. I mean, we're going to kind of bring in some inside baseball here. The fact that this market is a lot more kind of influenced by prep sports. We see a lot of big name programs. Like you brought up STM, Karen Crow, Acadiana High. Just in Lafayette alone, there's tons of great programs. Well, even the Southside Sharks coming up.
That's right. And look, there's another reason for what you just said. What you said is correct. You may not even know this. If you think about it, though, it absolutely makes sense. The reason high school sports, to your point, are so big here as well, they're undefeated.
Yep.
LSU, UL, that's a house that can be divided in Acadiana, as we've touched on time and again. Everybody unanimously loves high school sports, and the rivalries are a little different. It's not LSU, UL. There's never that feeling that creeps into this. Everybody is just all for it. That's why I say it's undefeated.
I'd have to agree. Honestly, we've never lost when it comes to these kind of rivalries, if you will.
No, and the listeners don't either. So there you have it. I know. We let off the hour with a little bit of showing love for a show hosted by a guy named Love. Isn't that nice and corny? Don't worry, we'll balance it out. We'll throw shade here within the half hour. We do have more of the show to go. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, 4 years and a day strong, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Welcome back to Bumper Sports with Ben Love, the famous CD in the house, and I got a lot of cool stuff for you in this segment. In fact, I've got a lot of sound from our guy, Paul Maneri. A lot of talking to the media after finding out that, one, they were hosting, and two, they wound up having a very interesting regional. I'll get to that towards the end of the show with Under the Dome. Definitely a rocky road to Omaha. It all starts at Alec Box Stadium. You'll hear all the action right here on 103.7 The Game from first pitch of the game against Stony Brook, hopefully all the way to the final out of the College World Series. Definitely going to be a fun one starting Friday night again with Stony Brook. And Paul Maneri talks a little bit about opening up the Baton Rouge Regional with an old foe.
I know that as soon as I saw that our first opponent's name up there, it was going to bring back a lot of thoughts about what happened in 2012. But in all honesty, this year has nothing at all to do with 2012, and I don't know much about Stony Brook's team this year. I know they won the conference tournament, so they got the automatic bid.
And I have to agree. I think that definitely got a lot of people thinking about Stony Brook in the LSU baseball series in the Super Regional back in 2012. I think that's what everybody was thinking about right away. In fact, Stony Brook had a little fun with it with a GIF saying, oh, hey, right to LSU baseball after they put out a tweet saying, calling Baton Rouge regional. But again, those two faced off in 2012 in the Super Regional. Paul Maneri gave a lot of credit to the 2012 Stony Brook team, saying that they were phenomenal.
In 2012, they were a phenomenal team. And I don't know if this team is as good as that team, but that team was unbelievable. They won 51 games that year, and won the Miami Regional. They won they beat Central Florida, Miami, all those teams, and they came here. I think they had seven players drafted in the first few rounds. In all honesty, I thought they were better than us. And their outfield was really, really fast. Their center fielder made it to the big league after being a first round draft series. So Stony Brook deserved to beat us in 2012 because I thought they just had an outstanding team.
But they're a very different team now. They won their conference tournament, and now they're going to be headed to Baton Rouge for a – and I know LSU is probably looking for a lot of revenge, especially when it comes to this series and how everything went back in 2012. These players, they know about it. They remember watching that as young kids in some cases. I know a lot of these guys remember that all too well, what happened back in 2012 in that Super Regional. They want to try and redeem themselves a little bit and open up the regional play with a win. But, of course, you know, Paul Menieri put it best. They just need to get ready and get out there to play. After what happened in Hoover, Alabama, I think they're ready.
We just got to get ready to play. I don't care who the opponent is. But when you play in the NCAA tournament, every opponent either won their conference championship or had a spectacular regular season and received an at-large bid. So, you know, it's obviously our players know the history of our program. They know the history of us playing against Stony Brook. So, you know, it certainly is going to get our players' attention, and they'll be, you know, I think it'll help us get ready to go. So we're looking forward to playing it. Not because of what happened in 12, just because they're a good team and we always want to play. We want to play good teams.
I love the fact that we're hearing a lot of Papa Top in the background. Everybody's having a good time, enjoying what's going on with Selection Monday. I'm sure a lot of people, since it was Memorial Day, definitely were taking it a little bit easier than they might have on a typical weekday, especially on a big Monday. And, you know, Paul Menieri, he talked a lot about what's going on with the Super Regionals. Definitely going to be a weird Super Regional matchup with LSU and Georgia. Seems like it's the trend du jour to have a lot of conference, super regional matchups to determine who punches their ticket to the College World Series. Because you look at it, like a lot of the host sites, there's a lot of SEC teams in there. There's a lot of Big 12 and Pac-12 teams paired up against each other. And Paul Menieri talked a little bit about it right here.
Yeah, and I'm sure everybody's intrigued by the matchup with the other Super Regional as well. You know, you got Georgia, the Georgia Regional matched up with us. We've already been to Athens, and I don't know if you remember this, but after the series, my comments were that was as evenly played SC series as I can ever remember. And I thought the two teams were very similar in a lot of ways. But there's two things. There's no assurance that Georgia's going to win their regional, and there's no assurance that LSU is going to win our regional. So outside of mentioning it now, and also the storyline that Mike Martin is going there, so if Mike Martin can pull off the upset in Georgia and we're able to win our regional, we could have Mike Martin at the super regional with his Florida State team. But outside of me mentioning it just now, we're not going to talk anymore about it. Super regionals. We have our work cut out for us this weekend.
That's the new S word for LSU baseball, is super regional. They can't say it anymore, just like how they can't say that O word. And you know exactly what word I'm talking about when it comes to LSU baseball and the road to that particular place out in Nebraska. But of course, Menieri, he went up diving a little bit more detail about the fact you keep seeing a lot of these conference matchups. I know you got Oklahoma State and Texas Tech paired up. You got a couple SEC in there. You've got the UCLA Corvallis Regional. That's definitely something that a lot of people aren't necessarily fans of. I mean, if you look online all over social media, a lot of people aren't a fan of that setup. And Paul Menieri definitely talked about how the committee, they definitely have a really tough job.
Yeah, well, you know, this 1 through 16 was supposed to stop that from happening. You know, and maybe it did to some degree. When you have four national seeds out of the SEC, four of the eight, it's going to be hard to avoid SEC teams playing SEC teams in the Super Regionals. It's really, I knew that would happen. I can't you know, speak to what conversations took place in the war room of the selection committee. Maybe they were intentionally doing that with other leagues too. I don't know. You got Oregon State matched up with UCLA, right? And wouldn't there a Big 12 matched up? And of course, you know, we're matched up matchup with Georgia. I thought Mississippi was going to be matched up with Mississippi State, but they weren't. Arkansas, Mississippi was with Arkansas. And I don't know if there's SEC teams and the other ones that would match up with the SEC national seed, the other national seeds. But, hey, listen, the committee has a tough job to do. I've been watching it for a lot of years, and there's going to be a lot of people unhappy. There's going to be some people that are happy.
And, you know, it definitely is. A lot of people are going to be unhappy with it. I think the fans are definitely not big fans of what's going on with the super regional pairings, how you have a lot of that conference. I like it, honestly, because it really shows how good a lot of these conferences are when you just look at everything. You've got the SEC being the powerhouse of all powerhouses, the Big 12, not necessarily as good as it had been in the last couple of years, and then the Pac-12, definitely on the come up with, obviously, Oregon State last year, national champs. If not for foul ball, they would have been runners-up, but it definitely is a big step in the right direction for the future of all those programs. Looking forward to kind of seeing what's going to happen with this regional. Obviously, Arizona State's going to be somebody that I think the LSU fans need to be concerned about because they hit the ball, and they hit the ball extremely hard. I want to see what happens there. But, of course, the biggest storyline heading into the regionals, and I'd say heading into the SEC tournament as well, has been the rotation. What does that rotation look like for the regionals? And Pulmonary, not necessarily certain of how it's going to go.
Well, obviously we'll sit down as a staff and discuss it, Brody, and we'll make a decision pretty quickly about that because it'll affect what the pitchers do as they prepare for the weekend. But I probably won't have an announcement for you all until Thursday.
Couple more clips from the longtime head coach of LSU baseball, Paul Maneri, and he had a lot of great stuff to talk about, namely one guy in particular. We'll get to Cole Henry in a minute, but we're going to go to the offensive side of the ball first before we kind of get ready to wrap up here, and that is Giovanni DiGiacomo, the man who has probably the best name in all of baseball right now outside of Hanson Modica, and they're counting on him quite a bit this weekend.
Partner be in a bigger role than in the starting lineup, isn't it? I mean, the only time he didn't start was when he faced the left-handed pitcher, and then as soon as the lefty came out of the game, he went in. So, Gio's done some good things. I mean, he still strikes out a little bit more than I wish he would, and, you know, he's still learning the game. There's no question that Gio's not afraid, and that he's a competitor. So, we're going to count on him a lot this week.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can wind up doing for this team. You know what? I'm going to take a quick commercial break because we're running short on time before we got to throw some shade at around 5:30. And then, of course, we'll wrap up hour number two with Shane Savoy. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. We're going to take that commercial break, like I said. And when it comes to Cole Henry real quick, basically what Paul Maneri said, that he'll be a lot better than he was in the SEC tournament. It wasn't casting aspersions, but it was just stating facts. And speaking of throwing aspersions, casting shade, well, we'll do that next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Right back in it. And it's like we never left. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, Ben, Clint, and then you on a Memorial Day. Glad to have you on 103.7 The Game. Plenty of great interviews still coming at you, including in our next segment, Shane Savoy, offensive coordinator for St. Thomas More Football. I know a lot of Cougars fans out there. More than that, some UL fans out there probably want to know about the quarterbacks right now at STM. One of them, in fact, both of them, now that I think of it, actually hold Raging Cajun offers. That includes Walker Howard, the youngster, the apprentice, and then there's the returning senior, Caleb Holstein. You'll get a handle on both of them and a whole lot more in our conversation coming up with Shane Savoy, and then another, the Acadiana area's own Chancellor Mayor at 6:15. We're talking prep hoops. That's what he does. So we'll wrap up LSU's class from 2019, and it now includes Trendon Watford. Again, this is basketball. UL's class, Bob Marlin, technically reeled in the top player in the state with Malik Wilson out of Rayville. We'll have those conversations and look ahead to 2020 with Chancellor Mayer. Again, that's at 6:15. But right about now, heck, I don't care if it's Memorial Day. I don't care if it's a time of reverence we're going to get a little irreverent, at least for a little bit, because, well, that's what we do. Here's your daily reminder that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website. You'll become a believer. It's patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. And know that you can trust their management top-down. It starts with Mark. He's going to sit down with you, and the team at Patio Center is going to create a vision and then fulfill it before this football season. But strike while the iron is hot before LSU, UL, and the Saints come marching in. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Well, this one today is awfully convenient and easy for me. I got to take in Stroh's socks live from Minute Maid. And I know it's the second time in two weekends that these two AL Giants got down on the diamond. They did it the week prior in Fenway. So when you think about the combination of those two, and you're going to ask Ben, life seems pretty good for you. You spoiled brat, what are you throwing shade at today? It's really simple. I'm throwing shade at all regular season baseball that doesn't mean squat. And seriously, I mean, this time a week and a half ago, all of the players on both sides of the divide, Sox and Stroh's, were discussing the fact that it felt like a playoff series, that there was playoff-type intensity in the building, in the locker rooms, in between the lines. And they said that about Fenway. I felt it at Minute Maid as well. Stroh's fans are usually pretty mild-mannered. They get up in arms when it comes to the Texas Rangers. Houston and Dallas have this like eternal fistfight that's going on that's pretty hilarious. But the one team, I think at this point, maybe outside of the Rangers, I guess you could say possibly the Yankees, but the Red Sox kind of get the blood bubbling a little bit. And that place was rocking on a Friday night. It was awesome to be there. And so again, we're somewhere in that, what, I don't know, 43, 44 game range of a 162 game season. And so today, you bet your bottom dollar. I'm throwing shade at the idea that, yeah, there have to be like, I don't know, 155 of these things that mean oh so little. The good news is this. There's a bit of, water at the end of this vision in the desert for me. It's not just a complete mirage, because I think these two are going to see each other again. And that would be a treat. If we get an ALCS with these two in it, anything that comes prior to then would not only be a shock, well, it would be unacceptable. I think these are the two best teams in baseball, not just in the American League. And I know that the Sox have been chasing the Tampa Bay Rays. Good on Tampa. Now, they were front runners. I hope they do clinch a wild card spot. They're better than I expected. Hard for me to see them holding on to that top rung of the ladder. But the Sox, absolutely outstanding. The Astros, they take a backseat to nobody. It was great to catch it. If you're not in that stratosphere, I'm throwing shade at you. You just don't belong.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Easy for me to say, right? Yeah, I know. I'm that guy. But it was that awesome. So it was great to get out there with my friends at Ardco Equipment. Great to speak to so many people. Again, two straight years that they've opened their arms and their doors to 103.7 The Game and B2BS. So we are eternally grateful. I love doing shows. Don't get me wrong. Got me going Thursday and Friday. I'll be back there this week. The Tap Room River Ranch. Rufino's on the river. It's the bomb. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love doing shows at local high schools, too. I've done plenty of that with my travels in high school basketball and football, play-by-play broadcasting. But there's something just a little different when you get into the friendly confines of Minute Maid Park. It was a lot of fun. Here's hoping we clinch a seat back there next year. All right, I told you, but I'll remind you again, we got Shane Savoy coming up on the other side of this commercial break. That means you don't need to go anywhere. Plenty more goodies coming at you on a Memorial Day. I'm Ben Love. joined by the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. And you know we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Back in with a special Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And of course, we're live on 103.7 The Game. Look, we're covering a lot of different bases today, if you will. It's baseball season. I get it. But you know, I got to talk some football. And it's been too long since we've had this man on the program. Let's rectify that situation. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, he's the offensive coordinator for St. Thomas More Cougars football. And it's great to be talking high school football at the end of May with Shane Savoy. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing great, and I'm right there with you, man. I love talking high school football, football in general, and I'm glad, you know, spring ball is just wrapping up around the area.
Well, you know, before we go anywhere else, let's start there. What did this spring teach you about a Cougars group that made it all the way to the Dome last year and I think put quite a scare into one of the best teams in the state in U High? What's this spring taught you and your coaching staff?
Well, that we have the same hunger, we have the same fight. You know, I think it's one of the things that Coach Hightower has done a great job of establishing at St. Thomas More, and that's just an expectation, a sense of what it takes to be successful, and that's hard work, determination, and showing up each day and doing the task at hand. And our kids are doing that, and we're excited about it. Look, we got a talented group of seniors that walked out the doors, and it'll be walking across stage, you know, this Tuesday, just excited about those guys and where they're headed off to. But we're also excited about what we have returning for next year. And hopefully we can duplicate kind of what we did last year, but maybe take it a little bit further and come home with a trophy.
Well, let's start with what you got coming back at quarterback. And that's Caleb Holstein as a senior. Of course, a lot of people know an underclassman that's coming up in the wings is a young man in Walker Howard that I think a lot of people understand will be a national level recruit, much like Holstein is. And I'll tell you what interested me, and I want your 2 cents on this, Coach. We had Jamie Howard on the program not all that long ago, and he loves the competition that Caleb provides. He says, my son feeds off of it. The two of them make each other better. And it didn't sound like coach speak from a former player in Jamie. What would you say about that situation?
Well, I think he's exactly right. I think nothing makes an athlete better than competition and having to strive to be your best each day, that you can't show up today and take today off because the guy next to you is going to exploit you. And the idea that these two young men can make each other better, the fact that now Caleb, having gone through the process as a national recruit, is only going to benefit Walker as he goes through the process as a national recruit. And the two of them together can really help, in my mind, each of their development and continue to make them better. So I'm looking forward to it as a coach. Obviously, from the outside looking in, you know, people think it could be a big problem. But from the inside out, I think I have a coaching staff who understands what it's all about. I think I have parents who are on board with what we're all about and what we're trying to do for the betterment of their young men. And our job really as quarterbacks is to put our team in a position to be successful.
Shane Savoy, offensive mastermind and quarterbacks coach for St. Thomas More football. Good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. Let's take them both individually. And a lot of people would ask, okay, how does Caleb Holstein improve on what he did last year? I'll forward that question to you because he was awfully good in 2018.
He was surprisingly, well, I wouldn't say surprisingly, but I mean, man, what a year. I mean, I don't think we ever would have thought we would surpass what Nate Cox was able to do in a single year at St. Thomas More. And then here comes Caleb along and just does a tremendous job, 72% completion, 47 touchdowns to 7 interceptions, just great decision maker, great accuracy, and our receivers played a large part of that. We had a senior-laden group of wide receivers that I think helped insulate him as a junior, but he also was able to help exaggerate what they were able to do as wide receivers as well. Where I hope for him to go is just a continued development in the overall understanding of the game of football, and it's one of those things that people take for granted, but our kids no longer just sit and watch full football games anymore. They watch highlights. They may watch 4 or 5 games at the same time. And what happens is there's less of an understanding, especially from the quarterback position, of game situations and game management. Understanding the down and distance, understanding what's needed in this play, understanding what the score is, and just the overall feel of the game. And those are the things that game experience both from a freshman, JV, and varsity level are going to help our young men make better decisions. And I hope that that's one thing, you know, with Caleb this year. When can I take a sack? When should I not take a sack? When should I take a shot? When should I check the ball down on? What's the down and distance? What are all the different situations in the game? And I hope that's where he can progress in this coming season.
As for the younger, the two quarterbacks, how would you describe really the skill set and the strong suits of Walker Howard? And in any way, is that complementary of what you've got with Caleb and might allow both of them to play a little bit this year?
Yeah, Walker is a phenomenal talent, not only from an athletic standpoint. I think he clocked in at a 4.7 or a 4.68 laser time 40 at one of those combines in New Orleans. He's got tremendous arm talent and just a knack for the game that I think is just going to make him even better in the future. He has the raw ability to be a tremendous quarterback. What I think Walker needs to work on is decision-making, and that just comes with understanding of the system, understanding of the game, and if each one of them were feeding off of each other, you know, from Caleb's standpoint, he can begin to be a little bit more risky, take a little bit more chances, because I think he has a better accuracy and a better arm, and I think Walker's going to show him that. That's going to push him into that. And on the other sense, I think Walker's going to benefit from the learning how to make decisions at the quarterback position. And it's so overrated, I think, in people, but to me it's the most important part of playing quarterback is how you make decisions. What information is going to sway you? What information is going to move you? And how will you respond to that information? And as Walker learns how to do that, he is going to grow more and more as a quarterback. I'm just excited about both of them's progression, not only in this coming summer, but this coming season.
Continuing our special Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports and continuing our chat with Shane Savoy, St. Thomas More Football. All right, it's more than just quarterbacks. You mentioned some really good veteran receivers last year, but there's no question about it. And you told me this last fall, that in William Cryer, you had one of the best workhorse running backs in a long time at STM. How do you move forward from him and some of your options that'll lead that backfield in 2019?
Well, I hope that we don't lose him completely. And what I mean by that is, William will leave a legacy, and really it's a continued legacy of what was before him at running back at St. Thomas More and what will be expected to come. And what I mean is there's such a tenacious spirit of our running backs. Our running backs run hard, block hard, fake hard. Whatever it is they're doing it as hard as they possibly can. And you can see it filter through the years, and William was an exaggerated example of that. Just watching him play was just a joy. It would bring a joy to your heart to see a kid play the game the way it was meant to be played, with such a joy and such a passion and such tenacity. And my hope is that legacy will push on not only through our running backs, but that our whole team continues to feed upon that and recognize that's what makes us special.
And look, I'd be remiss if I didn't point toward another young man who certainly will have an opportunity to play some big college football, Luke Howard, 6'3", 220, and not even a senior quite yet at the tight end position. What does he bring into your offensive room?
Well, to me, he changes everything offensively because it requires a response from the defense. So I feel like we've lost, in many cases in offensive football, our identity of being offensive, that we are going to offend the defense and force them to defend us. Well, a tight end that has the ability to not only set the edge and control the edge in the run block, but also release and press the field horizontally and vertically in the passing game, really kind of changes the game on how the defense is going to have to defend you. And because Luke is such a great combination of those two, I mean, he might be, I'd have to go back a ways, and we've had some great tight ends that have suited up in colleges across the country. He together with both aspects, could be one of the tops, if not the top, two-way tight end that we've ever had. Just really excited about what he's going to bring to us offensively from a leadership standpoint, but also just from a skill standpoint to be able to be dominant in the run game, but also be able to stretch the field from a hand-down tight end position, which is, most defensive coordinators will tell you, it is hard to deal with.
Before we let you go, Coach, we can't have a conversation about offensive football and not get to the big uglies. Who returns in 2019, and give us a little bit of the rundown of what you expect from that group up front?
Nicholas Wolf returns. Nicholas Wolf took over as a center for us first, second week of the year last year, and we couldn't get him out of the top five because he just did a tremendous job. And this past spring, I couldn't be more excited about how well he handled him. You know, one of the things that our defense does, if they play multiple fronts, multiple sets, multiple defenses, and it's up to our center to be able to recognize, identify, and to communicate with the other linemen what's going on and how we're going to handle that scheme. And Nick, I was really pleased with how well he handled that in the spring. He's going to be surrounded by a group of seniors, seniors that started every JV game last year. And look, it can be downplayed, but we focus on junior varsity and freshman football at St. Thomas More. We play two full seasons, 9 to 10 games in each, so that when those kids get to us as seniors, yeah, this may be the first varsity game that they've started, but that kid has already played one freshman year, two years of JV. This will be the fourth season that they've actually been starting and playing for. So there's a number of seniors on that offensive line, from Brent Bergeron to Wyatt Krieger, Philip Bork, Matt Cuneo. We're going to have a Sloan Wright, who I think did a tremendous job in the spring against our own defense. So it'll be a number of seniors, which I'm excited to see, and that's kind of the norm at St. Thomas More. Those seniors work their way to that position, and when it's their turn, they always seem to surprise us with how much they can overachieve.
Any rest for the weary coming up in June and July, or you guys get right after it?
We get right after it. You know, with 7-on-7 being such a developmental piece for us, especially in what we do offensively, we'll be right at it in June. We do a number of 7-on-7 league play stuff throughout the month. We'll go to the UL 7-on-7 at the end of the month. And then into July, we host a tournament at St. Thomas More, the Quick Slant 7-on-7. And then next thing you know, we're into the 2020 season, 2019 season. It's already there upon us, and our schedule is stacked for this season. So we just got development to do. We talk about those wide receivers. The ones we lose, we may have guys who are as physically gifted, but the ability to know the game and play the game and understand how to set up defenses and set up defenders, you know, the three we had there last year, those seniors, they were just tremendous at that. And my hope is that this summer will afford us the opportunity to teach those younger wide receivers how to play the game.
Coach Shane Savoy, St. Thomas More football, thank you for joining the program on this Memorial Day. Look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you so much, and, you know, thank you for all you do for high school football and for sports here in Acadiana.
Gotta love it. And look, I love it. I'm just a guy who gets to do what he loves, talking shop, talking sports. Great to do it on a Memorial Day right there with Shane Savoy. We need to take our final break of hour number two. It is a special Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back. Some tremendous guests coming with us. Don't go anywhere. This is B2BS on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Hour number three, we are off and running, just like you knew we would be. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, along with the famous Clint D. And here's the drill. We've been having fun on Memorial Day from here inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. But we're going to have to, well, we're not stopping the fun. We're going to have to get to some great guests. We have a couple of them coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Make sure you stick around. On the other side of our next break, Chance LeMaire, Prep Hoops Louisiana. We're going in, and we're going deep when it comes to 2019. The book is closing on LSU and UL's basketball classes. And we know that LSU just landed Trendon Watford. Pretty big deal. Just about a week ago, a young man that's a five-star prospect, top 16, 17 player in the country, I guess depending on the service that you look at. But he's a power forward that looks pretty primed to step into the shoes of Naz Reid. They're different players. Reid coming out of the state of New Jersey, maybe ever so slightly a little bit more advanced of a player and prospect, but not by a whole lot. this guy Watford, it was a big coup, and it still is, that Will Wade was able to reel him in and give a lot of credit to Bill Armstrong. I know we'll discuss that coming up at Chance LeMaire. So you never want to give too much away and pull the curtain back before you need to. But I'm looking forward to the conversation with Chance. He knows his stuff there. And I'm looking forward to seeing just how Trenton Watford might look with Javonte Smart also coming back and a couple of these LSU fixtures that are looking to be in the lineup heading into the 2019-2020 season. But don't forget, on the UL side, we got a lot to touch on there with Chance. Malik Wilson out of Rayville High School. It's not only one of the best programs the state has had over the last 3 or 4 years, he's one of the best players. In fact, I believe he is the highest rated player for the class of 2019. That plus Brock Morris coming from Daytona State back over to UL. Yeah, we'll have a lot to get to, and we will, with Chance LeMaire in our next segment. At 6:30, I'm looking forward to this. Ricky Van Asselberg. It's not just a fun name to say. He's a guy a lot of people, I think locally, are looking forward to going and watching at least his club. He'll be the skipper for the Acadiana Cane Cutters in this 2019 summer. Exactly what is he expecting? The type of experience he brings to the fold? It was a great conversation. If you heard it this morning with RP3 and company, I guess in this case, Van Asselberg was the company part. So you're going to hear from both of them right after Chance LeMaire. And then we wrap up a Memorial Day show. The only way we know, we're going under the dome. Clint, I don't know where you're going with that one. I don't want to know. Don't tell me. I'm going to earmuff it if you say anything. I want it to be a surprise for me as well as the listeners. And we've had plenty of time so far to dive into LSU baseball, understanding the events of the last few days over in Hoover and then the announcement earlier today. But one thing I will say, as we've had Astros baseball already on our station, I don't want to harp on this too much. I've already used it for throwing shade, but it's hard to head to Minute Maid and not have that leave a really lasting impression. And I know within the last 40 minutes, I threw shade at the idea of any regular season game that's not one with playoff implications. What I'll tell you now, as we're firing out the gate, it's hour number three of B2BS on 103.7 The Game. I'll tell you that there's a pretty special magic that really is in the air when you go to Minute Maid. How do I know this? All right, well, for starters, I was at the old Braves ballpark a good bit when I was going to school up there, and even since, going to Turner Field. Later this summer, I'm set to head with my wife on a trip back up to Atlanta, see some friends that are in the area, and I'm going to the new park, the one that they made in Marietta, SunTrust Bank Park, I believe it is. I'm looking forward to that. Also, later this summer, I'm heading up to Busch Stadium in St. Louis. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of baseball for yours truly. The point of it all is this. Some of these stadiums I haven't been to yet. I've been to others around the country. There's not a lot that's really like Minute Maid. I've been to Wrigley Field. That's its own type of magic. It's a little different. The ambiance is different there. I mean, you can look out over left field and you see all the apartment complexes that people are sitting on top of, hoping somebody cranks about a 490-foot homer so they can catch a ball. You got the bars that are right across the street. And don't get me wrong, right across from the Crawford Boxes and Minute Maid, yeah, I mean, you could walk adjacent to all the bars you really need to. But inside of that place, they got it going pretty good. I would call it the right mixture of corporate and down home, if that makes sense. And that's what I feel every time I go to Minute Maid. So, yes, Reed Ryan, the brain trust there. Yes, they have found ways to reel in the corporate dollars, as you have to. It's the freaking fourth largest city in America. Yes, you got to make your money. That's the reason to be in business. But they have also found a way to not just squeeze out the do-re-mi. I think they provide as much in-game experiential fun as a fan base could really hope for. I mean that, too. I've been to plenty of LSU football games, UL football games, home and away, for that matter. The Saints, I mean, ball games at just about every level. It's pretty special what they got cooking at Minute Maid Park. So I'll take a little time on a Memorial Day. It's not quite July 4th in terms of, hey, everybody's playing. Just hover around the barbecue pit. You can watch it all day long. It's pretty darn close. But I'll take a really serious baseball day and take an opportunity to at least share that part with you. All right, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. and it's a special Memorial Day edition of the program. We are brought to you in part each and every Monday by Relief Windows. And when you think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana, I'm going to encourage you to think Relief Windows, because they're helping people all throughout South Louisiana, and they have gelled wind manufactured wood windows. Why is that important? Because they're not going to rot. And there's also a 20-year warranty that assures you're going to get what you love, and it's going to be with you for a generation plus. So when you think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana, remember Relief Windows. All right, we got to hit our first break of hour number three. Chance LeMaire and then Ricky Van Asselberg. We're going to bring you two-thirds of the way to what we like to call the full Tom Emanski. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Right back in with more of the good stuff on a Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And of course, we're live. Ben and Clint taking you home on 103.7 The Game. We've got one other person, though, that wants to join the party for this segment. And who are we to decline that type of invitation? Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chance LeMaire, he's been with us before. You can, you should keep up with his work. PrepHoopsLouisiana.com. How are you, Chance?
Oh, always doing good. Always looking to talk some basketball.
Well, it's great to get you back. I know you're from the Acadiana area. Love you talking to the locals here. And how about Trendon Watford? This is about a week old as far as news goes, but I haven't had a chance to catch up with you since. Your reaction to the five-star big from the Birmingham area committing, then signing to Will Wade and LSU, what does it mean as far as on-the-court impact, and what do you think it might mean as far as maybe solidification of Will Wade remaining at LSU?
You know, I think it is a really big deal, not just for LSU on the basketball court, but for the kind of message that it sends out for where Will Wade stands, for the ability, for everything that has happened over the past year and for LSU basketball to still be able to bring in a potential one-and-done kid, a no-doubt top 25 kid in the country for his class. I think that says a ton. I think he is the same kind of talent level that Naz Reid brought to the table. Big 6'8", 6'9", can shoot it a little bit. I don't think he shoots it quite as well as Naz Reid did, but I think he's going to be better on the inside. I think he can definitely take it better off the bounce. He has a real inside-out game. Will Wade, especially, he loves his four men to be able to be versatile, to be able to put it on the floor. If you look across the NCAA, the most successful teams have successful foremen, whether it was UNC with Luke May this past year. If you look across the board, I was looking at it a little bit earlier this year, the successful teams have a successful foreman, and LSU picked up one of the best in the country for this incoming class in Trenton Watford.
Well, combine him now, if you don't mind, Chance, with James Bishop, as well as Charles Manning. I know a transfer. What do you make out of their class at large? I know that it's not the group that came in the year prior, right? But it's still pretty darn good, and I would think that it fills some areas of need.
I agree. This is a building block year for what was a headlining year recruiting-wise last year. I really like James Bishop. If you look at his advanced numbers he played on the Under Armour circuit this past summer. If you look at his advanced numbers, they are incredible. He gets to the line a ton. His effective field goal percentage, which is basically taking his two-point percentage and three-point percentage, plus his free throw percentage. It's a bunch of math nerd stats telling me that he's really good, okay? He's going to come in. He fits what Will Wade is trying to do. He's a downhill attacker. Will Wade's big thing is that Chance favors the aggressor. And there's no doubt that James Bishop is a big-time aggressor. And the same thing with Charles Manning. Charles Manning is a two or three kind of, if you look how Nevada played this last year, they were very positionless. That's kind of the way that the NBA is going for sure, and then starting to trickle into college basketball. Charles Manning is a positionless player. He can play the one, he can play the two, he can play three, he can play four. He's just a basketball player. He can put it on the floor. Super smooth game, gets to the rim. I think that this class, even though it doesn't have the headliners that last year's class does, it fills the holes that the team had this year a little bit. And I think, you know, I look at a bunch of polls and I don't see LSU in the top 25 preseason for next year. I think that's ridiculous. I think that they are going to be a no doubt top 25 team. I'm not saying that they're going to be better than they were last year. I mean, it's tough to be a Sweet 16 team in back-to-back years if you're an LSU of the world. But if they make it back to the Sweet 16, I would not be surprised at all. Even if they got farther, I wouldn't be surprised.
There you have it. Chancellor Mayer putting it on wax here in very late May. We'll see what comes to fruition starting closer to Thanksgiving. As we continue talking prep hoops throughout this day with Chance, I'll wrap up things with LSU, not by asking about the recruited, but the recruiter. And I know that Greg Heyer has been influential to what Wade and company are doing. Bill Armstrong, though, obviously deserves a lot of credit with pulling Trendon Watford, and he's had success at a lot of different places. So as much as you've gotten to know him and some of what he brings to the table for Wade, how would you describe Bill Armstrong on the recruiting trail?
I mean, he has done just the entire staff is phenomenal. If you look back at what Shaka Smart had at VCU with having Will Wade under him, having Mike Rhodes under him at VCU, I think Will Wade's done a very similar job at LSU. Whether it's Tony Benford, who had head coaching experience at UNT, but Bill Armstrong and Greg Heyer, I think, are both going to be really good Division I coaches within the next 10 years. So the fact that he has both of them on staff at LSU as assistants, I think he did a phenomenal job hiring. And Bill Armstrong and Greg Heyer, I think within the next 2 or 3 years, are both going to have mid-major plus coaching opportunities as a head coach. And they've proven time and time again that they can get the job done when it comes to recruiting the highest end of talents that high school basketball has to offer, for sure.
Chance, we'll stay inside the boot, and we'll go over to UL. And we know that they've got a headliner for the 2019 class as well. I guess if you could, a snapshot of what they're bringing in. And, again, it's led by a young man from Rayville.
Yeah, they got a headliner in Malik Wilson as far as bringing in the best player in the state for the 2019 class. So they not only got him, but they really brought in some older talent, some JUCO guys, that I think are going to have really big impact coming in right away. They brought in the biggest guy that I think is going to come in and be a big impact for what they do next year is Tyrus Smith, who was a JUCO transfer this past year. He played at Jones County, which is actually where Burbridge native Galen Alexander, who transferred from LSU this past year, they played together JUCO-wise this year at Jones County. Tyrus Smith is a big-time guy. He has Louisiana ties. He played AAU out of New Orleans in high school. He transferred in from UTEP last year. I actually got to see him play earlier this year. He is really good. 6'9", big old body, does a lot of work on the defensive end, high motor, which you don't see a ton for as far as 6'9 guys go at the mid-major level. But he is really good, gobbles up rebounds. I think that he is going to be very, very successful. And then the other two that they're bringing in the two Daytona State JUCO transfers are going to be really big for them as well. Dudu Geyer, which I think that's how you pronounce his name. I'm not totally positive about it, but he is also really good. Another 6'9 big that they're bringing in. I've heard that his nickname is Dugaru. So far, for all you Cajun fans out there, I think it's a perfect fit. He's really skilled at 6'9". They're also bringing in a 6'5 wing from Daytona State as well, who was a freshman this past year who averaged, I think, 11 points per game in a really tough JUCO league, shot 40% from three, can put it on the floor. I think that's another really good pickup that they got from the JUCO transfer wire. And then they're bringing in the Daytona State head coach this past year, Brock Morris, as an assistant coach, who has done a really good job recruiting Louisiana over the past few years, a Louisiana native. I think he's going to do really well there at UL. I am very impressed with the staff, with the recruits that UL has brought in for this recruiting class especially.
And it never hurts when you're going out to fill a vacancy, right, for an assistant coach. Kevin Johnson leaves, joins the staff at Tulane. When you're trying to backfill and you're Bob Marlin, never hurts to get somebody that's A, familiar with the program. Brock Morris is that. He's been here before. But B, he's bringing players. And you just heard about both of them from Chance LeMaire. Again, you can find his work, Prep Hoops Louisiana, another moment or two with him on 103.7 The Game. And now we fast forward to 2020, my good friend. A lot of people looking at Jalen Cook, and I don't think he's done anything so far this May and leading into the summer that's dismayed feelings that he's among the best in the state. And should he choose basketball, he's got a chance to be maybe one of the best point guards in the country.
Absolutely, absolutely. I actually wrote an article on Jalen Cook, kind of breaking down his game in depth about a month ago. I was a little too critical of him, I think, in the article. And I have since said that publicly. After watching the film of him on the Under Armour Association, I am so much more impressed with him than I was before. I think he has tremendous ability to create separation. I think his ability to knock down jump shots from the outside, off the dribble, off the bounce. I think he's an okay playmaker. I think he's about average. That would really be the place that I would like for him to get a little bit better. He doesn't have to be fantastic. I don't think that'll ever be his game. But with his ability to score the ball, he can do it on a level that not many can, you know? And then I think that his ability to shoot off the bounce, to shoot off the dribble, and his ability to attack the rim, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that he's not a consensus top 100 player in the country. The Prep Hoops, national rankings were actually the only, recruiting service that has him ranked in the top 100. I think we have him about 66, 67. I think it's ridiculous that he's not a consensus top 100 player in the country.
Anything else that you would say to kind of get the beaks wet of our listeners when it comes to 2020, whether it's a kid from the Acadiana area or even outside of Acadiana but still within the state that they need to watch out for an upcoming senior?
Michael Thomas, who's from the Lake Charles area, who is actually already committed to UL. Now, it's still kind of early in the process. We'll see exactly how that holds out. But he is a guy that's not necessarily from the Acadian area, but still kind of local, that you can get an eye on, that's already committed to UL. He's probably 6'1", maybe, point guard. Real bouncy, super long arm, super long frame. Really high IQ, kind of traditional point guard. I'd say one of the best defenders, if not the best defender in the state as far as guarding the guard position. I think it's him and Reese Beekman right at the top. And another kid to keep an eye on is Thomas Howell. He's about 6'7", 6'8", goes to St. Mary's in Alexandria. Super bouncy. He has a great body. I really like his game. He's shown the ability to shoot the three this year on the Under Armour circuit, which is not something that he's done traditionally in the past. But super bouncy, can really score on the low block, is a huge, huge rim protector on the defensive end. He can block shots. He can rebound. I think he's had 30 and 35 rebound games at the high school level this year.
Wow.
Which is just absolutely incredible. And he is a kid that you can definitely keep an eye on if you keep up with UL recruiting. I think that that's a guy that they can definitely go after. Coming up pretty soon here that they would be able to bring in.
He is Chance LeMaire, does great work with Prep Hoops Louisiana. You know we appreciate you dropping in on a Memorial Day. Chance, thank you so much.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. Always have fun chopping it up, man.
Hey, not bad at all, at least if I can say so. In the last 40 minutes, you've been sandwiched in between interviews with Shane Savoy, plenty on the St. Thomas More High School football front there, getting you ready for a little pigskin. And you know with me, I always keep it on the hardwood year-round. That's why it's great to get back with Chance LeMaire. So we've been here, there, and basically everywhere. So far on a Memorial Day edition of B2BS, we're coming right back in. We got a half hour to go, so don't you go anywhere. Ben Love, along with Clint Domingue, taking you home. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. at it rolling for another half hour, a Memorial Day edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, and we're going to switch it up a little. You just heard from Chance LeMaire. Look, I don't have to talk all the time. When we have great guests on the station, I love for the afternoon drive crowd to hear it the same way that the morning drive crowd got. And this morning with RP3, they had a good time with Ricky Van Asselberg, a man that's had his journeys playing and coaching the game of baseball. He's now with the Acadiana Cane Cutters. So to preview what you can expect this summer from Fallbacher Field in Youngsville, with no more further ado, here's RP3's interview, and it was a dandy with Ricky Van Asselberg.
It's our privilege to welcome onto the program the Acadiana Cane Cutters skipper, Ricky Van Asselberg. Coach, how are you doing this morning?
Man, I'm doing great. I tell you, it's refreshing to hear somebody call me skipper again, because that's the hardest thing to get used to in this college baseball stuff is word coach. I don't usually let my players call me that. I tell them I'm not a coach. I'm a skipper. I got coaches that coach. So, man, it's nice to hear from y'all. How's it going down there in Lafayette?
It's going well. It's going well, Coach. Appreciate you coming on. Let's talk a little bit about your background. I know you're originally from Alexandria. You played briefly with the Baltimore Orioles and their organization. How long was that experience with the Baltimore Orioles and their organization, and what are some of your fondest memories from that time?
You know, a brief stint, you know, I think a year and a half, you know, could never stay healthy. But the, you know, the funnest part was all the guys that I played with that played, you know, made it to the big leagues. And, you know, Jerry Harris Jr. had a great career up there. My roommate, you know, was Jason Worth. He, you know, everybody knows, I think he played till he's like 36 or 37, maybe even longer than that. So, you know, still, you know, talking to them guys and hanging out, you know, and knowing a bunch of people that played in the big leagues. And then, you know, my first year managing in Alexandria, I was only 31. And I actually even had some guys that I played with that played for me. And, you know, had guys that were older than me that played in the big leagues, like Trey Beeman and stuff, that, you know, that I played against when I was with the Orioles. And, you know, so, you know, being able to coach them guys and manage them and play with them and all that, and looking back and just, you know, like every athlete says, it's the clubhouse is the stuff you remember. You know, I couldn't tell you how many home runs I hit. I couldn't tell you what I hit what year. You know, I can tell you, you know, about what we did in the clubhouse and hanging out and stuff like that. So that's probably the main thing that I remember the most, is just hanging out with the guys in the clubhouse and, you know, stuff like that.
We're talking with Acadiana Cane Cutters skipper Ricky Van Asselberg here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Talk to me a little bit, skipper, about, you know, you got into being a manager of a ball club early. You were only 31 when you took over the Aces. You had instant success, back-to-back United League titles, and then you even played for the finals, I want to say, that third year, and you moved on to other associations. Were you surprised by the amount of success that you had at such an early age? And did that have a negative impact on you where it kind of raised the bar for everything else that you were going to be doing moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I always was, you know, confident. I always thought that I'd be a good manager, you know, I was a catcher all my whole career, playing, you know, even for college at pro ball. So, you know, knowing how to run a pitching staff is a big part of being a catcher, and that's a big part of being a manager. So was I surprised to win 4 championships in 5 seasons? Yeah, I was very surprised. And, you know, when you do that, you're right, you set the bar high. So everywhere you go, you know, they expect you to win. And, you know, I try to tell everybody it's not that easy. You know, it takes a lot of luck and a lot of, you know, players got to stay healthy and you got to get hot at the right time. And I think, you know, most of my success, and I think my best quality as a manager, is just, you know, controlling the players and keeping everybody happy and knowing when to make changes and, you know, basically knowing how to run the bullpen. I always say it's the biggest part of the championship, you know, knowing when to make changes and when not. I think good managers in a 140-game season will win 10 ball games, but bad managers will lose you 50.
I like that. Bad managers will lose you 50. We're talking with Ricky Van Asselberg. He's the manager for the Acadiana Cane Cutters right here in Acadiana. They open up their season this Wednesday at the Victoria Generals for a 2-game set before returning home for the home opener on Friday night versus the Brazo Bombers there at Fallbacher Field. Ricky, your career's taken you kind of all over the place. You even were able to manage in the Atlantic League for 1 year with the Bridgeport Bluefish. What was that experience like being over there on the East Coast and coaching and managing in that league?
Well, you know, being in Bridgeport, it was just like the same thing when I was in the American Association. It was a new challenge for me, and being able to go up there, because every league's different. You go, you know, like the Frontier League's a rookie ball league, and then the United League's like an A ball league, the American Association like a double A league, and then the Atlantic League's like a triple A league, you know. So on my 25-man roster, I probably had 15 guys that played in the big leagues, and everybody else had triple A experience. So, you know, actually those guys were the easiest guys I had to manage. You know, they know what it takes to play in the big leagues. They know what it takes to get there. So you don't have to tell them to get out there and get their work in. They're getting their work in. Basically, what you got to do is just manage personalities, you know, and do the right thing. I think that year we had 21 guys re-signed to an organization. And so when I got the job, the GM up there was Jamie Toole. And when he called me, you know, he was asking me all these questions. And I finally just said, look, Jamie, I'm not going to have the resume all them big league names got. You know, I said, I'm just a small town guy. I've been an independent ball manager. I've won everywhere I went. You want to win? I'm your guy. And so he believed me and signed me. And we went up there and, you know, we was in first place. In the first half, 30 games in, 20 games in, we lost 5 players in 2 days to organizations, so we had to regroup. And then in the second half, we was in first place again, 20 games in, we lost, I think, 8 players in a week. Well, when you lose that many players, you know, you just can't find them. But, you know, that's why I think I've had a lot of success, because everywhere I've been, I've had a lot of guys, you know, signed to organizations. So when you do that, guys want to come play for you. And so I've been real lucky, real fortunate, but, you know, the Atlantic League was great. And, you know, of course, Bridgeport ended up closing down, and they brought New Britain back in, which used to be the double-A franchise for the Twins. So once that happened, I decided I got a pitching coach job up in Traverse City, and I went up there, and I was there for a week, and I had to resign. I had some back issues, and I had a back surgery, and then I had another back surgery, and that's kind of what got me in the Texas Collegiate League, you know, with having back surgery. And it's just a new experience, man, and I love it. It's fun. These kids have got, you know, they want to get going, and a little different, but, you know, got to figure it out.
We're on with Ricky Van Alselberg. He's the skipper of the Acadiana Cade Cutters, who open up their season on Wednesday on the road and come back home for the home opener this Friday at Fallbacher Field against the Brazos Bombers. Ricky, you know, you talked a little bit about you had your back surgeries and that kind of put your career on hold. You got back into it last year, where you served as the skipper there for the Texas Marshals in the Texas Collegiate League. They're based out of Dallas. That team is now relocated to Baton Rouge. So walk me through, how did we get involved here with Acadiana? You know, you're from the state of Louisiana, so obviously either being the skipper here in Acadiana or down in Baton Rouge would have been ideal for you with all your family and everything like that. So tell us, how did you get hooked up becoming the skipper here for the Cade Cutters?
Well, I would assume, to be honest with you, every time we'd go down to Lafayette and play when I was here with the Marshals, you know, the fans, they had a little group of fans that would always sit there, and they remembered me from Alexandria, and they'd have signs up, and they'd always welcome me when I'd get off the bus, and we'd sit out there and shoot the bull, you know, before the game. And every day when I was there, I'd talk to Mr. Richard, you know, the owner of the Cane Cutters, and we'd sit there and just talk baseball, and we'd become friends and got to have a pretty good relationship. And I love South Louisiana, man. That's my home. That's where I'm from. And so when the season was over, you know, we talked on the phone a bunch, and he called me, and he said, Ricky, he said, what's the chance of you going back into pro ball? And I said, well, I'm just found out, Mr. Richard, I got to have another back surgery in December, so that's kind of going to hold me for another year or two. And he said, well, would you be interested in coming to Lafayette? And he said, why don't you come down and bring your wife, and we'll go out to dinner and talk about it. Well, we went down and went into this little restaurant, and I can't remember the name of it, but as soon as we walked in, there was a sign that says, wear shoes on dance floor. So I had to explain to my wife, you know, down in South Louisiana, the way when we start dancing and having fun, we kick our shoes off and let it roll. And she started laughing, and it just kind of set the tone. And then, you know, we had met with Mr. Richard, had a good dinner, and I, you know, I didn't even ask what the pay was. I just said, hey, I'm in. I'm excited. And that's kind of how it happened.
Ricky, with the Texas Collegiate League being what it is, they're using actual kids that are still in college. you know, in your team, your roster is going to have guys from UL and LSUE and LSUA and across the board, Northwestern State. But a lot of these guys have, you know, sometimes the pitchers have pitch counts. And a lot of these guys are still playing postseason ball, so they're still not with the team. You'll get them late. Some guys will come in, they'll come out. So with a year already under your belt over there in Dallas, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges you as the skipper has of, you know, kind of getting this team to gel together with so many moving parts?
Well, the first thing I tell these kids what I've seen, when you get them there, you have to let them know that somebody's paying money for them to be there. Somebody's paying money to come watch them play. So it's a privilege to be there playing, and we're there to win. You know, a lot of these kids go play summer ball, and a lot of these coaches, you know, they I've heard them say many times it's not about winning, it's about having fun, letting the kids get better. And to me, it's always about winning. Everything's about winning. And people, and this is probably going to offend some people, but people that say it's not about winning is most time people that's never won. And so that's what I try to instill in them. I try to let them know, hey, every night we go out there, we're going out there to win. And I understand these certain guys are on pitch count, so you got to realize how many pitches they can throw, and then you got to, all right, well, we're going to throw this many here, this many there. Then you get new kids come in, and, you know, you might have a kid from, you know, Notre Dame, and then you got a kid from LSUE, and you just got to, you know, kind of let them know that, hey, this is where this kid is, this is where you are, that we're all here together. You know, it's kind of like having some guys from Venezuela and some guys from Dominican and some guys from Texas and guys from California all on one team. It's the same thing. You know, you got different personalities, and I think that's the biggest job as a skipper is to get all those personalities to be one personality and go out there with a common goal and get the job done.
We're on with Ricky Van Alsenberg. He is the skipper of the Acadiana Cane Cutters. He's joining us today via the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ricky, we'll get you out with this, brother. How excited are you for the season to be starting in a matter of days? Right now it's Memorial Day, but you start off the season in Victoria for a two-game set on Wednesday, Thursday, before coming back home for the home opener against the Brazos Bombers on Friday night there at Fallbacher Field. Just tell us, how excited are you for the season to finally be here? It's only days away.
Well, right, hey, man, I'm super excited. I hope we pack the house opening night. It'd be nice to have 2,000 or 3,000 people in the stands and have some people tailgating and to come home to the way, you know, South Louisiana baseball is supposed to be. And I'm just looking forward to coming down there and putting on a good show for the fans and putting a team on the field that's going to play hard day, night in, night out, and just give everything they got to give, you know, the Cane Cutters fans and Lafayette and Mr. Richard and my product to be proud of and something, you know, when they go to the store, they'll have their Cane Cutter stuff on, and they'll be like, hey, that's our team. Because in reality, that's Lafayette's team, Youngsville area's team. That's their team, and I'm just excited to be a part of it, man, because there's nothing but good people down there, that's for sure.
Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. We got to hit a final break of today's program. But the good news is this. The men, women, and children all get what they demand. When we return, time to go under the dome with the famous Clint D. What happens then? Your guess, frankly, is as good as mine. We'll be right back in for one final time. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on a Memorial Day edition of the program on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And right back in one final time. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're wrapping up a Memorial Day edition of the program on 103.7 The Game. Sometimes you just have to take a deep breath when I consider where I have been, where the show has been over the course of the last 7 days. And it's been nutty. I mean, to say the absolute least, Tuesday of last week. So, yeah, a week from tomorrow, your boy had to have one of his wisdom teeth yanked out of his dome. Yeah, that wasn't a whole lot of fun. But we got it done and then, you know, came back on Wednesday and got our feel for the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Yeah, a little one-on-one time with Clint D, kind of like today. Thursday of last week, the Taproom River Ranch, where we do what we do every Thursday. And then, of course, Friday, our last program before today,
live from Minute Maid Park. So, yeah, I hate to sound like that guy that's on the commercials, but I've been everywhere, man. Seriously, been traveling, been having some fun, been getting over some sore jaw issues. Seriously, don't have your wisdom teeth taken out too late. It's just a bad idea. But anyway, that's enough of me. One thing that can help, a guy that probably talks too much, is to pass the mic a little bit. Happy to do that. Clint, time for you to take us home in this segment. Time for you to take us under the dome.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The road to Omaha, it goes through Alec Box Stadium once again. It seems hashtag as expected, but trust me, it is going to be a bumpy ride considering who they're paired up against, especially when you just look at the Baton Rouge Regional. I'll get to the regional they're paired up with in just a little bit if it winds up running chalk. But it's going to be a bumpy ride, of course. Everybody's going to talk about the big bad wolf that is Stony Brook. But the Seawolves are the least of the Tigers' concerns right now. Because you just look at who they could wind up facing off on Saturday in Southern Miss and Arizona State, both potential monsters. They can wind up having their problems and causing them for LSU. Because I have to say, the Sun Devils are absolute beast at the dish, leading the nation with home runs, 92 of them, an average of 1.7 per game. That is impressive numbers, to say the least. That is almost gorilla ball numbers. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do when they head to Alec Box Stadium, which isn't far from where the old Skip Bertman Field used to be, and that's where gorilla ball was born. Going to be looking forward to that. And, of course, you got Southern Miss, a team that can wind up causing some trouble. They beat Ole Miss late in the season, and also the Rebels. They want to make it to the SEC tournament final, and if not for choking in the SEC tournament, not choking in that game, they probably would have wound up going back-to-back SEC champs. And then you have a potential super regional game with the Georgia Bulldogs. That's going to be interesting to see what happens between those two, especially because the Bulldogs have a pretty damn good pitching staff, ranking top five in the nation just in terms of ERA. Definitely going to be interesting to see what happens with them. And I talked about this team last year, making Omaha. I'm not quite as confident now because definitely there are a lot of potholes in that season.
Not bad at all. In fact, Clint, so good, maybe you should have your own show. Maybe we should name it after that segment. Or maybe we already did. Shameless Saturday mid-mornings plug by yours truly. But we do appreciate Clint taking everyone under the dome. And I want to thank everybody for listening in as well. I know many of you had the day off of either work or hopefully you weren't at school anyway. If you were, a lot of you, you had a little hall pass for today. We enjoyed spending our time with you. We want to thank all of our guests who made it happen on a Memorial Day Monday edition of B2BS. And seriously, for everybody that has, well, bared with the show now for 4+ years, you know, Clint, I think I'm going to reflect on that. Before we hit the finish line for our show today, really is amazing. May 26, 2015, we set sail. And here we are. I mean, we really have made it all the way, 4 years, 4 trips around the sun, plus a day for good measure. This has been absolutely spectacular. If I were a recruit, I would say I've been hashtag blessed. It is the truth. I just try not to use the kids' lingo. But this has been unbelievable. I've loved every second of bringing you Bumper to Bumper Sports, working with Clint, finding ways for us to do shows, not only here in the studio, but seemingly all around Acadiana, Louisiana. We've taken this thing out of state, as we did Friday at Minute Maid Park. We've had shows in, let's see, Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah, we've gone a lot of places, obviously, up to North Louisiana, down toward Lake Charles, in the corners of Southwest Louisiana. We've been to New Orleans, to Baton Rouge. I mean, freaking everywhere. And my hope for the future is that we keep finding new places. We keep finding new ways to entertain you. And most importantly, I don't like talking sports at you or to you. I love talking sports with you. So long live B2BS from that respect. I love a place where we can gather and continue to talk sports together. So again, thanks to the famous Clint D, and genuinely from the bottom of my heart to YP. You people out there in listener land, thanks for helping us make 4
With any luck, we'll get to five, maybe even more. I do know this. Clint's saying, all right, bravo, but we got to get the hell out of Dodge. And so we shall. Thanks again for dialing in. For all of our guests today and Clint, my name is Ben Love. And you've been listening to Bumper Sports 4 years strong. And we're going for more on 103.7 The Game.